Somewhere in the heart of a spacecraft, C controls the burn of an engine. In a hospital ward, it guides the rhythm of a pacemaker. Across oceans, it directs packets between continents. And yet, this language was never designed for fame. It began in a quiet lab on a borrowed machine, in the wake of a failed project. What followed was not a grand unveiling, but a slow, deliberate shaping of something so efficient, so adaptable, that it still sits beneath the modern world. This is the story of C, built in the labs of Bell, shaped through experiments, and defined by choices that still echo today. To understand C is to walk into a room in 1969, where computers filled walls, keys clicked like typewriters, and the future of programming was still a question no one had fully answered. Bell Labs, Murray Hill, New Jersey. Summer, 1969. The Computing Science Research Center had just walked away from Multics, the grand joint venture with MIT and General Electric. Multics promised a new kind of computing, secure, interactive, multi-user systems, but the project dragged on, hardware delays, budget overruns. Then AT&T pulled the plug. Overnight, the lab lost its operating system, its main development environment, and its sense of momentum. In a back room stood an odd, underpowered relic, a DEC PDP-7, no disk drive, 8,000 18-bit words of memory, barely enough for a few modern web images. Programs were fed in through paper tape. Interaction came through a clattering teletype terminal. Most would have written it off as useless, but Ken Thompson saw possibility. The PDP-7 hummed in the corner, its lights blinking in no particular rhythm. To most, it was a dead end. To Thompson, it was a blank page, and the machine would listen to anyone patient enough to speak its language. Before Multics collapsed, Doug McElroy had brought in TMG, a compiler tool. It could turn a formal grammar into a working compiler. On the G645 Multics machine, Thompson had used TMG to bring up BCPL, a language by Martin Richards. BCPL was minimal, word-oriented, and portable, perfect for systems work. When Bell Labs left Multics, BCPL went with it, at least in spirit. Thompson adapted it to the PDP-7, stripping it down even further. The result was B. B was compact, typeless. Everything was just a machine word. For a machine with so little memory, this was a blessing. B let Thompson rewrite Unix utilities faster than assembly would allow. But the Unix kernel itself, that stayed in assembly, without types, without byte addressing, without floating point support, B couldn't fully express the hardware's capabilities. The lab acquired a PDP-1120, small by mainframe standards, but with serious advantages. The PDP-11 brought byte addressing for 8-bit data, multiple registers ready for work, and even clever addressing modes that could step forward or back with a single instruction, all wrapped in a richer instruction set that felt almost luxurious compared to the PDP-7. For programmers, these weren't just specs on paper. Byte addressing meant characters and text could be handled natively, without awkward bit shifts. Multiple registers gave room for complex operations without constant trips to memory. And the auto-increment modes, they turned pointer arithmetic into something almost graceful, letting loops glide through arrays with mechanical elegance. Unix was quickly moved onto it, but B language began to show its limits. Byte-level operations required awkward workarounds, floating point support was non-existent. Dennis Ritchie began extending B, adding char for single bytes, int for integers, and later long for larger integers. Bitfields were introduced for compact data storage in system code. Pointers became integral, their arithmetic mapping almost perfectly to the PDP-11's hardware. For a time it was called New B, but by 1972, it had outgrown its parent. The name followed the alphabet. After B came C. The name was simple, almost an afterthought, but inside the lab it marked a quiet shift, a language no longer borrowing its identity, but ready to stand on its own. The changes began small, a new type here, a pointer there, nothing that looked like a revolution from the outside, but inside Bell Labs, a language was beginning to emerge that treated hardware not as a barrier, but as something to be danced with. C's first incarnation was lean but deliberate, offering just enough to work, close to the metal without drowning in complexity. There were types for single bytes and full integers, for precise floating point work, and for data packed tightly into memory. Structures let information travel in neat formations, while pointers, C's sharpest tool, could navigate anywhere in memory. Arrays and pointers danced so closely that one could slip into the role of the other without anyone noticing. Even the preprocessor was there, not as decoration, but as a hidden workshop for macros, file inclusion, and conditional code, the quiet machinery behind the scenes. By 1973, C had matured enough to take on its greatest test, rewriting the Unix kernel itself. This would be the moment of truth. If C could replace assembly in the Unix kernel without losing speed, it could open the door to something unthinkable at the time, software that could survive outside the walls of a single machine. Until now, the operating system's heart was in PDP-11 assembly, This meant that moving Unix to a new machine would require rewriting thousands of lines of low-level code. Ritchie and Thompson began replacing it piece by piece, file system code here, device drivers there. Each rewrite proved that C could match assembly in performance while being far easier to maintain. When the final components were in place, Unix became one of the first operating systems with a kernel written in a high-level language, a milestone that permanently linked C with portability and systems programming. With Unix now in C, the operating system and the language began to travel far beyond Bell Labs. Source code, once trapped inside a handful of machines at Bell, began its journey across oceans, in brown envelopes, on magnetic tapes, carried by researchers. Unix and C arrived at universities and labs where new generations of programmers would see the code, change it, and make it their own. Before we continue with how C and Unix began traveling beyond Bell Labs, a quick word from today's sponsor, Boot.dev. If you're watching this, chances are you love digging into the foundations of programming, the kind of knowledge that shaped languages like C. But knowing history is only half the story. To truly understand programming, you have to build. That's where Boot.dev comes in. It's not a course you just sit through. It's a fully interactive, gamified learning platform for back-end development. Instead of endless videos, you'll actually code your way through lessons in Python, Go, TypeScript, SQL, and more. Every step is hands-on. You'll write code, solve challenges, and build real projects that sharpen your problem-solving skills. And if you ever get stuck, you're not left alone. Boot.dev has Boots, an AI mentor that nudges you in the right direction, helping you learn without giving away the answers. The best part? It's built for people who want to escape tutorial hell. You'll stop copy-pasting snippets and start understanding how systems actually work, the same mindset that let Dennis Ritchie and Ken Thompson take Unix from assembly into C. So, if you want to go beyond watching code and actually start thinking like a back-end developer, try boot.dev. You can get started for free today. Head over to boot.dev/codesource, that's boot.dev/codesource, and start your journey. Alright, let's get back to the story. Because once C was rewritten into Unix, it wasn't just a tool inside Bell Labs anymore. It was about to change the world. Portability itself proved trickier than it first appeared. Moving C code between architectures revealed hidden problems. Data swapped end for end on some machines, stubborn alignment rules shifted memory boundaries, and even the humble int or long could quietly change size, breaking assumptions that had been buried deep inside the code. Programmers joked grimly, "Write once, debug everywhere." Meanwhile, other languages were vying for the spotlight. Niklas Wirth's Pascal enforced stronger type checking. The Ada project promised rigorous safety for mission-critical systems, and later C++ would extend C with classes and templates, creating a split between those seeking higher abstraction and those defending C's minimalist control. To truly move C between machines, a portable compiler was essential. In 1978, Stephen C. Johnson created the portable C compiler PCC, mostly written in C itself. PCC could be adapted to a new architecture by modifying only a small machine-dependent section. This design allowed Unix to leap from one hardware platform to another with far less work, and every leap carried C further into the computing world. Also in 1978, Brian Kernighan and Dennis Ritchie published book, The C Programming Language. Concise yet complete, it documented the Bell Labs dialect of C and established idioms that would shape generations of programmers. It taught not just how to write code, but how to think in C, trusting the programmer, minimizing abstraction, and demanding awareness of the machine. The book became so influential that its style of syntax and formatting is still called K&R style today. Across campuses, in computer rooms smelling of ozone and warm circuit boards, students unspooled magnetic tapes stamped Unix and C compiler. They didn't just run the code, they studied it, rewrote it, argued over it. In those rooms, the language began to take on a life of its own. By the early 1980s, C language was everywhere, but not consistent. Vendors and universities had extended it in incompatible ways. To solve this, the ANSI C Committee, X3J11, was formed in 1983. Their mission? Create an official standard without losing C's defining character. The result was ANSI C, published in 1989, and adopted internationally as ISO C90. It unified syntax, clarified behavior, and defined a standard library, creating a stable foundation for decades of software. After C90, the 1990s cemented C as the foundation of modern computing. It became the primary teaching language in universities worldwide, and dominated embedded systems development, from consumer electronics to industrial controllers. But by the late 1990s, computing had changed. The internet had moved from research labs to the mainstream. Hardware was faster, more diverse, and more networked. C needed to modernize, not by becoming safer or higher level, but by giving programmers more expressive power and compatibility with evolving hardware. C99 reshaped the language. C99 brought familiar comforts from newer languages into C's minimalist world. The 2000s brought a harsher spotlight. buffer overflows, dangling pointers, and integer overflows, issues intrinsic to C became the root cause of major security breaches. Governments and industry began arming programmers with new defenses. Static analyzers like Coverity and Clang could scan code and spot dangerous flaws before it ever ran, while runtime tools like Valgrind and Address Sanitizer watched programs in motion, ready to flag an invalid memory access, the instant it happened. These weren't theoretical safeguards. In 2003, a single buffer overflow in Microsoft SQL Server's C code unleashed the slammer worm, which within minutes disrupted ATMs, airlines, and emergency services, a harsh reminder of what was at stake. As multi-core processors became standard, C faced demands it had never been designed for. Native threading, atomic operations, and Unicode support for globalized software. If the 1970s were about fitting code into scarce memory, the 2010s would be about orchestrating many cores and threads in parallel. In 2011, after years of steady evolution, C took a leap into the modern age. C11 arrived not as a reinvention, but as a tune-up for a world now running in parallel. It could finally speak to many threads at once, giving each its own private workspace. Through generic macros, functions could shift their behavior based on the type they were handed, no preprocessor trickery required. It spoke a richer Unicode, moving text cleanly across languages, and passed data between CPU cores with the steady hand of atomic operations. For the engineers of the 2010s, these changes weren't just technical niceties, they were survival tools. Data centers now ran hundreds of services in parallel. A race condition could cripple an entire platform. Unicode meant that a messaging app could work flawlessly from Tokyo to New York, without a tangle of encoding bugs. Atomic operations became the quiet guardians against subtle multi-threaded corruption, the kind that could cost millions in lost transactions or hours of downtime. In a world where software was now a critical public utility, C language had learned to operate not just fast but reliably at massive scale. It even offered optional guardrails, not to restrain the driver, but to keep the most dangerous curves in sight. C17 followed as a bug fix release. By this point, C was no longer the hot new language, but it still powered browsers, operating systems, and billions of embedded devices. In the 2020s, the push for memory-safe languages intensified. The US, NSA, and other agencies recommended moving away from C and C++ for new critical infrastructure. Meanwhile, Rust emerged as a credible systems programming competitor. Linus even began integrating Rust code for specific drivers, but Linus Torvalds confirmed C would remain the kernel's main language. By the early 2020s, the C Standards Committee faced a clear challenge. Rust was gaining traction with its promise of memory safety, while C still dominated systems where performance and control were non-negotiable. The question was not whether C would survive, but how it could adapt without losing the very qualities that made it indispensable. The Standards Committee worked on C23, aiming to modernize tooling integration without abandoning the philosophy of programmer control. It refined Unicode handling, introduced new standard attributes, and expanded the standard library with safer string functions. C23 also aligned more closely with C++ on certain keywords, easing interoperability between the two languages. For the first time, the committee discussed long-term coexistence with memory-safe systems languages, acknowledging that while C would remain essential for low-level control, the future would involve a more mixed language approach. 56 years after its birth, C language is still everywhere. It hums inside the Linux kernel, runs on tiny embedded microcontrollers, drives the logic of databases, routes the traffic of the internet, and even rides aboard spacecraft streaking beyond Earth. From the PDP-7's paper tape to modern supercomputers, C's DNA is everywhere. It shaped Unix, the internet, and the thinking of generations of programmers. It is not the safest language, it is not the easiest, but it has proven to be one of the most enduring. C was never about guardrails. It was about giving you the keys and trusting you to know the road.